From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a longtime political junkie sat down at his keyboard. He wanted to write the script for his upcoming podcast, and he has done dozens, hundreds of podcasts. But this time, he started and then stopped. Couldn't figure out where he really should begin. He thought about January 2nd. Remember that day? It's almost like everything before January 6th is now a blur. But that Saturday, January 2nd, it was revealed that President Donald Trump spent an hour on the phone trying to convince the Georgia Secretary of State to give him victory in that state. Trump was clearly trying to invalidate a closely certified election. And this political junkie was horrified. A part of him, he would later say, was still shaking. For Ken Rudin, he decided that we can't just focus on January 6th. We have to understand the Georgia phone call. We have to understand the efforts to steal an election. We have to see the full picture of how far our politics has fallen. A political junkie loves to talk politics. He loves to analyze the dynamics that allow one party to take back power and another to strategize to win a midterm, for one candidate to rise in the polls, another to fall. But Ken Rudin was not in a jocular mood when he put together his most recent podcast and when he thought about the first week of January 2021. He felt sick. He wondered how he would ever recognize again the country that he has loved to cover on public radio and on so many venues. We've asked Ken Rudin to join us on Connections to understand the context of what has been a very dark month. He's long been known as the political junkie. Welcome back, Ken Rudin. How are you?
Evan, thank you. Boy, I don't sound like a nice guy in that interview.
You are a nice guy, but I understand. Hey, I listened to the recent podcast, and I mean, listen, I have felt the way you have felt at times. It's not about...
You know something? I was on a show not too long ago, and the guy said, well, you're one of those left-wing radicals. And I said, this has nothing to do with ideology. I'm not going to make an argument for Joe Biden or anything like that. It's about decency and comity and integrity and not lying. I mean, I don't know if it started on that escalator ride down in Trump Tower in 2015, but whatever it is, it's been just one untruth and sad moment after another. But usually I'm a really happy guy. I really am. I swear.
You can still find Ken's work, and despite how he feels about the current political moment, krpoliticaljunkie.com. And, you know, I actually thought the way you started that recent podcast was really important, Ken, because I found myself in the days after January 6th talking to a friend, and I said, you know, it was like a week ago that we were all talking about this phone call to Raffensperger. And that was probably an impeachable offense. That was probably worse than anything Nixon did. And that seems to have been forgotten in this, you know, in this avalanche of January 6th and beyond here. Let's go back to that and tell me why you wanted to make sure that there was some focus not just on January 6th, but on January 2nd, what we learned that day.
Well, I mean, there's so much. The fact is that we have the president of the United States calling an elected official in Georgia, a Republican, no less, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, and basically the president said, I want you to find me some votes because I won the election, even though it was taken away from me, it was stolen from me. And one reason I know it was stolen is because I had huge crowds during the campaign. And I'm thinking, I've checked the Constitution, I've checked secretaries of state. You don't win an election because you have huge crowds. I think you have to get more votes. And, of course, in the presidential race, more votes is not all you need, because Hillary Clinton had more votes. Al Gore had more votes. And I dare say Grover Cleveland had more votes, but I don't want to go back that far. But the point is that all the things that he was doing was basically trying to upend an election. And, you mentioned Nixon. Nixon doesn't even come close to anything that Trump has done. Donald Trump basically was organizing. I mean, this sounds dramatic and it sounds beyond the pale, but it was a coup attempt at retaining power. And nobody did anything like this ever.
Ken Rudin, the political junkie, joining us. And listeners, if you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK. 844-295-TALK. 8255-263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. I agree with your sort of not only the opprobrium that you have felt, but also the desire to make clear that this is not about any partisanship or even it's not about public policy at all. And I kind of had this moment, Ken, where the January 2nd story breaks and the audio of this phone call of Trump trying to shake down Brad Raffensperger comes out. And all credit to Raffensperger for standing up and doing his job in the face of a president. I kind of had this idea that, well, this will be the thing. And I don't know how many times in the last 4 or 5 years I've thought this will be the thing, but I thought this will be the thing that supporters of the president will say, whoa, we wanted to win an election, not steal it. We don't want to tell somebody that you've got to come up with a magic number of votes so we win by one.
I thought so. Drives me nuts. I mean, I remember during the humiliation of John McCain, and you know he's not really a hero because he was captured. I said, okay, this time
that'll be the one. Yep.
And then we heard the Access Hollywood tape. I said, okay, no. This time he definitely did it. And then on the morning, the day of January 6th, when clearly he incited this mob that ransacked the Capitol, went to the Capitol as part of some kind of sedition, and I thought, okay, wait a second. There's no way that he comes off as anything other than a traitor or somebody who should be, down to the lowest of the low when it comes to history. And yet you still had 126 Republican House members and 8 Republican senators who voted to upend Joe Biden's win and not accept the electors. I said, when is it enough? And I realized it never will be enough. It just won't.
Well, do you feel that there's no pulling back from it? I mean, David French made some very interesting comments recently. For listeners that haven't followed David French, I mean, you really ought to. Just a wonderfully interesting person, a really interesting public thinker, a conservative who briefly considered running against Trump in 2016. He probably would be considered a never-Trumper on the conservative side. But what he said recently was he doesn't think it's a impossibility to bring back some voters from even supporting what happened at the Capitol on January 6th. He said what they need to see is that there is no secret plan that Trump had, that he isn't going to arrest Joe Biden and be the permanent president, that he's not a shadow president, that he lost. And David French said if they see him as a loser, then things will start to change, that there will be a coming back to reality. That was David French's view. What do you think, Ken?
I disagree completely. Huh? Because if they didn't see, no, I do. I mean, that's, if somebody paid attention to the facts, they would know that Donald Trump lost the election. Sure. But these people, this has nothing to do with Democrats or Republicans. This is, I mean, I must sound like I'm losing my mind here, but maybe I am. But it sounds like, this is a cult figure who spoke to the disenchanted in the country. I understand what he promised, and he delivered on many of his promises. He promised conservative judges. He delivered. He promised a more conservative foreign policy. He delivered on that. There's a lot of things he did that he promised he would do. It was just the absolute need for power. The fact that, if anybody reads the New York Times today, the article in the New York Times today, my goodness, it's like 9,000 words, and I couldn't get enough of it. Basically, it talked about the 77 days, I guess starting with the Raffensperger call. No, I'm sorry. It starts on election day when he was convinced it was stolen from him, and it was it was Dominion voting machines, and it was Chiang Kai-shek, and it was Guy Lombardo. I mean, everybody in the world was conspiring against him to steal the election, and yet nobody has changed their mind. The fact that after all this came out, the fact that all the things that happened on January 6th and beyond, the fact that you have 45 out of 50 Republican senators saying that there's no purpose to an impeachment trial in the Senate, my goodness, I mean, if there's any argument for an impeachment trial, it's what's happened between the election and now.
David in Auburn, Jack in Greece. We're going to take your calls in just a second. And I've got a stack of email to read already for Ken Rudin, political junkie, joining us on Connections. But just one other point on this, Ken. You know, I think about back in 2016, there were people, smart people, who argued that Donald Trump doesn't want to win this election. He knows he's not going to win, and he doesn't want to win. He wants to brand build. He wants to burnish his businesses. That's what this is all about. What was forgotten about that was that when Donald Trump was running in the Republican primaries, Ted Cruz wins Iowa, and Donald Trump says he stole it. It was rigged.
Right.
He couldn't even lose one state without saying that Ted Cruz was a cheater. And by the way, his dad might have helped Lee Harvey Oswald. And
his wife is ugly.
And his wife is ugly. And he stole Iowa. I didn't lose it. It was stolen from me. Then during the summer months, he's the nominee. And he's asked, you know, about facing Hillary Clinton. And he said, if I win, I win. And if she wins, it's rigged. He was like that from the beginning. He not only wanted to win, he telegraphed from the start that he would never accept losing, and he would try to subvert the results of a loss anywhere, a primary 2016, 2020. It's consistent, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, basically, the reason, according to Donald Trump, the reason he lost the popular vote in 2016 was all those illegal voters from California who were not truly citizens, but they were from Neptune or somewhere who just came down and voted against them. And, you know, and basically Russia tried to, this is my favorite, that Russia did everything it could to elect Hillary Clinton. Forget about the fact that Russia released all of Hillary Clinton's emails in an attempt to embarrass her. So you're absolutely right. He was preparing an excuse for losing in 2016, even though he wound up winning. And he did the same thing in the debate now. Remember in the debate, he said, will you agree to a peaceful transfer of power? And he said, no, I can't. I won't do that. If I win, it's fair. If I lose, it was stolen. I mean, that might have worked in fifth grade, and it probably worked throughout his life in Trump Industries, you know, when he got what he wanted because he was Donald Trump. But you don't get what you want just because you're Donald Trump, especially in a democracy.
Ingrid in Penfield called in off air just to say thanks to Ken Rudin. She says she's learned more about politics from Ken Rudin than she has from anywhere else in her life and wants to thank you for your optimism, Ken Rudin. Your optimism.
Well, you know something? I do have optimism. I really believe this stuff works. Otherwise, I wouldn't be obsessed with it for so long. And I love the history, and I love, you know, talking to people who really, really believe in the fact that we could save this country. But my goodness, at least I just want people to listen, even if they look. I have no problem with people who voted for Trump because there were certainly arguments to vote for Trump, and Joe Biden may not have been the best candidate. Hillary Clinton, goodness knows, probably was not the best candidate. But it's the lying and the abuse and the insults that is just, you know, Don Rickles was fun, but he was not the president of the United States. I can't believe I'm talking about Don Rickles, for God's sakes. but that's where I am somehow.
Let me get back to the phone now.
But thank you, Ingrid. Thank you for that, Ingrid.
David in Auburn. Go ahead, David.
Hi. Ken, you're just so fair, overly fair, outrageously fair when you should be out. I'm glad to hear you're outraged now because I haven't heard it to that degree. I'm reading the book, Too Much and Never Enough, by the niece of Trump, Mary Trump, and that says it all about his background. And the other person, the other author I'd like to see, if you know about, is Greg Palast, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, whom even Noam Chomsky talks about. So those two books and authors I'd like some comments about. Thanks very much.
All right, David.
Thanks for the call. What's so fascinating is that we've always known this about Donald Trump. This has been part of his persona from day one. And yet suddenly somehow said, well, I didn't know this was going to happen. He told us he would do what he did, and he did it. And people are still stunned.
Do you know the book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Ken?
I don't. I do know Mary Trump's book, but I don't know the other one.
Okay. Jack in Greece on the phone next. Go ahead, Jack.
Oh, hi, Evan. Thank you. Hey, Ken, thanks so much for all the years of your insight on the radio. I really do enjoy listening to you. But anyway,
thank you.
But I appreciate your opening comment about bringing us back to, you know, from January the 6th, the insurrection, but bringing us back to the roots, you know, that the president called the governor or attorney general in Georgia trying to get them to basically cheat on the election, find me 11,000 some odd votes. But, the thing that sticks in my mind a little bit is, you know, we put this guy in the White House. He could have gotten reelected, I think, if he didn't screw up COVID, the pandemic. And he might have won again. But the thing that brings me back is, all these people voted for him and support him and have swallowed the lies that he's, thrown out there. But, it brings me, it was about 2 or 3 years ago, I can recall a poll that was done, and you can argue about polls, I suppose. But it talked about the fact that Republicans trusted Democrats less than they trusted the Russians. And it's like, when we have that type of, that's who we are. It kind of explains how this guy got in there in the first place. And that people are willing to say, I accept this guy because he's my guy. He's protecting me. I lost this job. I lost whatever I lost, or I hate whatever I hate. And he likes, he's my guy, and he's going to help me win the way he won. And they believe all of that. But it comes from, I believe, in my perspective, is it's coming from us, that's where we turn to. And it's like, how do you address that, and how do you turn that around is what bothers me. But thank you again. I appreciate your insight.
Well, that's
a good
point. I mean, this nightmare didn't start on January 20th, 2017. I mean, the roots were there for a long time. But just the thought, I mean, again, it's not even Trump. It's the Trumpism that has infected the party. The thought, I mean, which I have such trouble getting my hands around, the thought that Liz Cheney is a threat to the party, but Marjorie Taylor Greene is not, that's Rod Serling territory. It's just beyond. And unless you have people who could stand up and look, Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy, for goodness sakes, went down to Mar-a-Lago to make to make peace with Trump. So I mean, I remember. I mean, I don't remember well, but I remember after Barry Goldwater lost in 1964, it was less personal then. It was more about ideology, and I understand that. And plus, it was after the Kennedy assassination, and there was no mood. The country wasn't in the mood for Barry Goldwater. But the fact is that the party knew what was wrong, and it took steps to change what needed to be changed. There's no leader in the party who can stand up and say, here's where we've gone wrong and here's where we can fix things. Mitt Romney, could be just like Cindy McCain was censured by the Arizona Republican Party. I mean, Mitt Romney could easily be censured by the Utah Republican Party. Those who stand up, to give truth to power, get ridiculed and diminished and dismissed by their own party.
Yeah, let me get back to your phone calls. Audrey in Rochester.
Evan, this is a three-hour show, right? I have so much to say.
I know.
Okay,
it's flying here. Go ahead, Audrey.
Hi. I'd just like to thank Ken for helping me survive not only the pandemic but this past election year. Ken's honest, informative, and sometimes even funny. And there's no two-drink minimum. So thanks a lot, Ken, for helping me survive.
Thank you, Audrey.
Thank you, Audrey. That was very kind.
And you can find, as Audrey probably does, Ken's work. We've heard Ken for years, and public radio Ken's always been a favorite of public radio audiences. krpoliticaljunkie.com. Anywhere else you want to mention there, Ken?
No, but I'll be at 7-Eleven next week in the third aisle of talking to some people.
Teddy in Fairport.
Audrey will be there.
Teddy in Fairport next. Go ahead, Teddy.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for taking my call. So, gentlemen, I'm hearing a lot of the tone of news right now be basically from the perspective of being baffled that people would have elected Trump and that, you know, he continues to have support even after the fact, or that they believe that he ought to have won or did won and it was taken from him. I want to ask you and then offer a suggestion of my perspective of why. Why do you think that is?
Well, I'll start on this just because, you know, you address this to both of us, and I'm happy to mention. I mean, I think it's complex, but I think if you look what happened with the GameStop stocks last week, I think there's an analog here for the wider sort of trend of some of the president's voters, which is that if you look at what happened in GameStop, I'm going to oversimplify this story, but generally speaking, people have been shorting stocks on Wall Street for a long time. And some of it you could argue in the same way that Carl Icahn's work had a utility because it added efficiency when companies were not doing well by their shareholders or by the public that didn't want their goods or services. Others would argue that the shorting, the aggressive shorting, was a way of manipulating the market. And I kind of view Wall Street as has become sort of a complicated casino in recent years, and there's a lot of different mechanisms in which it is manipulated. And what you had on Reddit was a group of people who figured out a way to sort of manipulate back. It was like a counter-rigging because they felt like, well, this thing is rigged against everybody except for the select few who get to play, so let's go mess with them. Let's just mess with them. It may not even end well for us, but we'll have some fun doing it, and we'll burn it down a little bit. And that's how sort of the events of last week started. Who knows where they go? I think there are a number of voters who feel for the first time that it doesn't matter if I'm benefited by something. I want others to be hurt. That's why we saw a lot of the kinds of signs that say, you know, blank your feelings and, you know, no more blank, and a lot of sort of coarseness to it, because there's a lot of anger and frustration. People can argue whether it's justified or not, and I'm not belittling it. I think there's a lot of pain, and people feel that they are no longer part of a country in which there is sort of a chance for success or growth. Now, I think there's also a lot of complicated issues surrounding race, and I think a lot of it ties together. But, I mean, I don't think there's a snug answer for this. Teddy, I don't know if Ken thinks there's a snug, easy answer. I do think it's people who wanted to break the system, and Trump was a tool to break a system. What do you think, Ken?
I think part of that is true, but I think there are a lot of people who truly believed that they were getting hurt by the changes. Like, for example, during the Obama years, and of course even before that, thousands and thousands of jobs were being shipped overseas. The definition of marriage was changing before their very eyes. What's this same-sex marriage? Remember, in 2008, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, they all opposed same-sex marriage. But suddenly it's thrust on you, and if you didn't like same-sex marriage, you're a bigot. What happened to my job in the coal industry? What happened to my job in this industry? But so I understand that frustration and that anger and disappointment and that need to reach out to find Donald Trump. But at the same time, how do you show up? How do you show up in the nation's capital wearing a T-shirt saying Camp Auschwitz, or wearing a T-shirt that said 6 million weren't enough? That's beyond, and then you elect people to Congress like Marjorie Taylor Greene's and Lauren Boebert's who say these things that are just beyond, just so hateful. What happened that we went from feeling a loss, feeling that we were being, you know, losing out on things, and a genuine feeling of loss, to just such hate? And you know, I mean, all these QAnon people who I remember the Nazis marching in Skokie. I remember the John Birch Society and George Lincoln Rockwell and all those things. But those were fringe people. They weren't people who the president of the United States reached out to. And that's the part I can't get my hands around.
Okay. Teddy, what do you think?
Well, I agree with both ideas. I want to amalgamate them in saying that they are both true, and put a timestamp on it. I think that the reason that Carter lost the election was because he was trying to address systemic and
you know, transcendental, you know, spiritual decay in the United States, mm-hmm. a lack of understanding where to go next, and a lack of willingness to address our, you know, pardon my French, our and, you know, get our house in order. And.
Well, I lost you, Teddy. So I'm gonna leave it there with Teddy's call, but I'll ask Ken Rudin.
Evan, how did that 7-second delay work?
Yeah, we got it.
Okay.
It's okay. Listeners, you didn't miss much. It was just one word. Teddy basically, okay. But Teddy had a lot to say there. Anything you want to add there, Ken?
No, I understand that frustration and that anger. I mean, I'm not as positive about the Carter presidency as he might be, but the fact is that there are people who tried, and with so many failures, you have a guy like Donald Trump promising elixirs, and people just flock to it.
I do think we have to just ask briefly, at what point do we say, well, this isn't, you know, sort of a few troubling people, Marjorie Taylor Greene, a few people with ideas that are obviously harmful, dangerous, wrong, but this is tens of millions of voters. This is who we are now, or this is who a party is now. When does that threshold get crossed? Because it seems to me that we're pretty much there, Ken.
Well, I'll never say that 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump are Marjorie Taylor Greene types, but I think they accept more things than I ever thought they would, because you know, Trump stands up to the elites and the powers that be, and more power to him. But it's very, very disconcerting.
Russell in Brighton, next on the phone. Go ahead, Russell.
Oh, fine. I'm kind of enjoying this discussion. But I think the problem of being 89 or 90 is that you remember what was going on a long time ago. And I think this all started at the end of the Civil War. I think there's a fear of a group of people in this country that we're losing the country. We're being taken over by people that are black and brown and yellow. And all of these things, they're getting the jobs. They're smarter than us. And we no longer have the power that we used to have. And it's no different than what happened after the Civil War, as far as I'm concerned. Okay. At least history shows that was one of the real... Why was the South a solid democratic thing? Because they couldn't stand the word Lincoln. And since the Republican Party had that thought that it's a party of Lincoln, you had to go to another party. This is what is just a long-term reflection. But growing up in New York City, or better yet, in Brooklyn, most of us knew what Trump was. Most of us knew what Trump's father was. So it is not surprising. Now, I'm a lot older. I'm a professor emeritus. And when I hear what went on with the science coming out of this ignoramus's mouth, I mean, it just... It was painful. It's just like somebody is sitting there hitting you in the head. How can you say that? How can anybody at that level say that when he's got next door to him NIH, which has a wonderful, massive number of brilliant people, but the CDC was pretty good too, and FDA was fine until this stable genius, so-called, took over. And I don't think people appreciate that. So, anyway, it's a wonderful discussion. This is a Klan-like situation. I don't want to bring religion into it, but that's what it looks like.
I appreciate it, Russell. I think this last point there, Ken, he meant to say this is like a cult-like situation.
I'll tell you what, and I agree with that. And I'll tell you why I agree with it, because how in God's name has become wearing a mask become a civil right issue? I mean, as opposed to staying safe, when the president of the United States mocks those who wear a mask and mocks those who does the social distancing, so many of his followers says, well, if Trump says it, he must be right. We saw this tragic story of a woman talking during the Democratic convention about her father who refused to wear a mask, who refused to social distance because he believed in the president. And, of course, her father died. And, look, you know, I mean, to actually blame. Look, it's not a question of blame. The fact is that he said so many things that people just jumped into and followed as a cult, and it took so many lives. And you, I think, you know, Evan, you said earlier that Donald Trump could have, very possibly could have won this election if he handled the virus the right way and not dismissed it as the flu. But he didn't, because that's not, because it hurt the stock market. It hurt his ratings. And that's just tragic.
Yeah, I'll never forget him signing a graphic of a stock of Wall Street's, you know, 4 hours before the closing bell. It was like March 12th, and it had finally, the market had finally gone up after it had essentially collapsed in the intervening, in the previous 5 days, and he signs it and gives it to Lou Dobbs as some sort of a memento. I mean, what is Lou Dobbs doing with that thing? And I, but that's what it was about. That's what those days, early days was about. It was about concern about the markets. And unfortunately, Ken's right. Talk about distancing, talk about masking looked apparently weak and not in Trump style. I am late for a break. I've got to take it now, and we're going to come back. Jim in Rochester, Jeff in Greece, Roy in Rochester. We'll take your phone calls. Ken Rudin is happy to be here with us, and we're happy to have him. He's the political junkie. You know him through his many years of work through public radio, krpoliticaljunkie.com, to find his latest. And we're right back with him on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections. A Monroe County legislator says he sent a picture of male genitalia to a 19-year-old woman by mistake. Now there's an investigation. We'll talk to victim advocates about cases like this one, how it happens, and the impact it can have. In our second hour, former Rochester Mayor Bill Johnson joins us for a conversation about the inauguration of a new president, and the former mayor has thoughts on his time spent in the American South during the Trump years. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Randy emails the program to say, Evan, I was a registered Republican for all of my voting life, over 40 years, until Trump. I cannot even recognize the party any longer. Mitt Romney is one of the few Republicans left that has a backbone. And the most amazing thing is that many of my Republican friends, when I ask them about the lies that Trump spews, they defend him, saying, Trump doesn't lie. It's like some sort of sick cult. Where are the principles of smaller government, stronger defense, balanced budget, honor, integrity? It's like those values were ejected from the party like weak old pizza. I don't get it. That is from Randy. Ken, you say that that's more the mainstream. And Randy's saying he left the party because even his Republican friends have gotten on board with all the things that trouble you, Ken.
Well, Randy made a point that I smiled at, and I know it's going to happen. During the 4 years of Donald Trump, when he ran up these gigantic, humongous deficits, there was no complaint by fiscal conservatives, which the Republican Party is known for, complaining about it. But you know that once Joe Biden starts offering budgets and plans and programs and things like that, you know that they're going to be born again fiscal conservatives trying to protect the deficits, protect our grandchildren from these deficits.
Ken, I'm sorry, not Ken. Ken is Ken Rudin. Jim.
That's me.
Ken's going to stay happily for us. Jim in Rochester next, on with Ken Rudin. Hi, Jim, go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hello, Ken. I'm a registered independent. I'm not here to defend Trump or anything that really went on, but I just talk of the day of his inauguration. There was just riots all over the country. The hate from the left before he had done one thing was just off the charts. And it seems how easily we forget about just how partisan people in the left and the right have gotten. You know, the Women's March, the day after his campaign, it was just nothing. You know, celebrities calling for his execution and after Trump, and it's just before he did anything. So it's just, it's going both ways. It's disgusting what our political landscape has become in the last, 4 years.
Well, let me just jump in, Jim, and just say, I think, first of all, you're referring to Kathy Griffin in what was a really ugly joke where she held a, it was like a wax-severed head of Trump. It was a, I thought it was a problem. I didn't hear other celebrities calling for actual death, so I think you are hyperbolizing there. The protests around the country were not riots on the day of the inauguration. I mean, there's, you know, there's scuffles and things like that in some places, but it wasn't riots in American cities across the country, as you describe. So that is hyperbole. There was anger. There was vitriol. There were probably plenty of people who didn't want to give him a chance. And you always hope that people who lose an election will give the other side a chance to prove them wrong. And if your conclusion is they didn't do that enough, I understand that. I don't think it compares to the idea of, I think that there's vitriol is an issue, Ken Rudin, but I don't think anything compares to literally trying to steal an election and convince multiple states that their voters didn't vote the way they voted. I just don't think that's the same thing.
Yeah, you know, I listen to what Jim says, and I understand exactly what he's saying, but there are so many things, like, for example, women, you know, women, the day after he was sworn in. Well, think of what Donald Trump said about women during the entire campaign.
On the Access Hollywood video.
Well, but that, yes, that, or that he's, that's locker room talk. But even everything else about people and Megyn Kelly and all this disgusting and just awful stuff. And yes, there were Antifa people, folks who went way too far and were called out for it. But the Trumpsters, even January 6th, if you go on social media, everybody, all these Trumpsters say these are really Antifa people and Black Lives Matter people. They are the ones responsible. And whatever you want to say about Black Lives Matter protests and demonstrations, think of what preceded that. The regular, systemic killing and racism of Black people by the police. George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and things like that. Sometimes people say enough is enough, but to compare that to what I saw on January 6th, I understand that there are two sides, but as Donald Trump said with Charlottesville, there are not good people on both sides. I really don't think it's a fair comparison.
Let me get Robert in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi. First off, I want to remind people that Donald Trump recommended we delay the election, which conveniently would have left him in office, which has never happened in our history. But my question is, since there's no hope of getting impeachment, what would you like to see the Congress do? And do you think it's a dangerous precedent to prosecute a former chief executive? It's one of the things we really discourage other countries from doing.
That's a fair question. I mean, I remember very well in Gerald Ford's pardon of Richard Nixon in 1974, and I thought that was the right move. A lot of my friends didn't at the time, but I thought, you know something, the country has gone through so much. Let's just stop it now, and let's start to exhale. And I thought it was a good move. If you look at what the president is trying to steal an election, a democratically held election, and steal it, I can't imagine in somebody who believes in democracy anything could be worse. I don't have to compare it to breaking into the Watergate or covering that up, but this is just beyond the pale, stealing an election. Would a censure matter? Look, you know, they were saying about Marjorie Taylor Greene. They say, well, they shouldn't expel her, but they should censure her. Well, of course, she'd love a censure because she'll put that on her, you know, on her Twitter page until they take away Twitter from her. They'll say, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm censured by the corrupt House of Representatives. Look, the only purpose of going through this trial is to have a subsequent vote that would bar him from running for office again. And I just think that given what he's done and given what he's said and given all the things he did with Raffensperger and Kemp and the other states and those legal concoctions by Jenna Ellis and Rudy Giuliani and everybody else, there should be consequences. You're not going to get this. Of course, you're not going to. You only got 10 Republicans in the House to vote for impeachment. You're not going to get 17 senators to go along with a conviction. Maybe a censure is the answer. Maybe something like that is the answer. But we shouldn't just I mean, Republicans have been saying, well, you know, Joe Biden said he wants unity. Well, where's the unity? Well, where are the Republicans calling for unity when Trump was doing all his things? Something has to be said for the history books, even if it probably won't be a conviction by the Senate.
All right. Back to the phones we go. And next up is Jeff in Greece. Go ahead, Jeff.
I heard a comment. Someone was mentioning that, Republicans trust the Russians more than they trust Democrats. And I'm not really a Republican or a Democrat, but I kind of agree with that point of view. And part of my reason for thinking that is, though I am registered as a Democrat, I don't really identify as one. I would think of myself more like a Bernie independent before he crossed over. And I feel like, you know, Trump didn't steal the election in the primaries, but I think that Biden and Hillary both did steal the election from Bernie Sanders. And it's kind of hard to trust the Democratic Party, you know, even if they're, you know, giving up the budget committee to Bernie and things like that. That's not the same as being president. So I definitely agree that there's a lack of trust between the two parties. And I feel like within the Democratic Party, good for them. Lucky Biden won. I mean, I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for Trump. I wrote in Bernie because I believe that he was the right person for the job. And I just wonder what you think about that. How do we unify from here?
Okay, Jeff, thank you for the call. Go ahead, Ken Rudin.
Jeff, do I think the fix was in between Bernie and Hillary in 2016? I do. Do I think that the Democratic establishment definitely wanted Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders? Absolutely. Do I think the election, the primaries were fixed? Absolutely not. African-American voters came out in droves, especially in the South, to vote for Hillary Clinton against Bernie Sanders, and that's why she won the nomination. Would she have been a better candidate than Bernie? We'll never know, but I don't think that was fixed. And how do you say that Biden stole the election from Bernie in 2020 or against Trump? I mean, every cockamamie lawsuit that went before all these jurisdictions, these legal jurisdictions around the country, were laughed out of court by the judges.
Jeff from Greece would say that that Biden was giving a weak performance in the primaries, appeared almost out of it, and then the party to thwart Bernie coalesced. Everybody dropped out at the same time. They all supported Biden because they wanted to stop Bernie.
Well, let me disagree with that. I think what happened was that, yes, he was doing poorly. I thought he was doing poorly in debates. He got clobbered in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada. African-American voters, led by Jim Clyburn of South Carolina, said, we are going to make a stand. And between South Carolina and Super Tuesday, blacks came out and gave Joe Biden the nomination. So I don't think it was stolen. I don't think it was any chicanery involved. The black voters came out and made their feelings known, and then all the other candidates dropped out of the race and united behind him. I don't think it was an anti-Bernie thing, and personally, I don't think Bernie could have beaten Donald Trump, but that's that's just me, but.
Let me hit a couple.
I think one of the strengths that Joe Biden had was that he was not an ideologue. He was not left-wing socialist or whatever Trump would have wanted to call him. He was just, I mean, he plodded through a lot of the debates. He plodded through much of his 36 years in the Senate, but he was not somebody who frightened people away like I think Bernie would have. But that's just my view.
All right. Let me get a couple of emails before we get back to phone calls. Jill just says she's confused. A couple of months ago, she was looking for you on the usual nights on the radio, and now she hears you're still podcasting. She wants to know where to find you.
go to krpoliticaljunkie.com. What happened was, it's a long thing, but the same program that you heard on WXXI is my podcast. It's the same exact thing. It's just it's not on the radio. It's only a podcast now. If you go to iTunes, if you have Alexa, just say Ken Rudin's podcast, and you go that way. You could Alexa or go to my website, krpoliticaljunkie.com, or, you know, stuff like that. But it's easy to find, and it's very rewarding.
Jillian says, wants to know, who sent you the Nate McMurray button, and do you still collect buttons? Do you want a Joe Morelli button?
Yes, I do. I got it when he first won. The last time I was in Rochester, Audrey Kramer, bless her heart, put together a wonderful event with Louise Slaughter's daughter, mm-hmm. and it was just wonderful. And Louise Slaughter, I knew pretty well, and it was just, you know, one of the more remarkable members of Congress. But I do, yeah, I absolutely need buttons. Yes, I do.
All
and
right.
It doesn't have to be Democratic buttons. It could be Republican buttons, too.
Looking for buttons. Collecting buttons.
Yes.
This is Bob and Menden next on the phone. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, Evan. Hi, Ken. You need several hours for this topic, but I've got a question for Ken. I am from New York. I've lived here most of my life. And everybody here knows Donald Trump, knows what, you know, the kind of character he has and how he does his business dealings and what he's done to people during business. And I'm curious if you feel that his reality TV show, The Apprentice, it made him look like he was a very competent boss and he was intelligent and, you know, he was in charge. People from New York know that that's really not the guy who he is. But do you feel that that had any impact on the election?
I do. I do very much. I mean, I think it was too late for the media in 2016 to suddenly say, hey, this guy is dangerous. This guy has a history of cheating people, of not telling the truth, things like that. But the folks at NBC who wanted to have The Apprentice, it was a moneymaker. They loved it. They loved CNN, loved having him on the show. He was he drew attention. He made headlines. And I think he was more of a curiosity when he should have been investigated more thoroughly. But the Republican field, you know, Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and everybody else, they just fell in line. They didn't offer what Trump did. If nothing else, he's not a successful businessman, but he portrayed himself as a winner. He went into debt 13 times, but he portrayed himself as somebody who's a winner. And people like that, even though his record doesn't bear that out at all. But I agree with you. I'm from New York. I grew up in a small town called the Bronx. And, I mean, people knew about Donald Trump from day one.
All right, let's try to squeeze in as many as we can. Jason in Brighton next. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I got to go back a few callers. Just a guy that made a comparison between the Women's March and what happened in Washington recently. And I happened to be at the Women's March. I was one of the non-women there. But I'm 60 years old. It was the most amazing exercise in democracy and people getting together and trying to improve our country that I certainly have ever witnessed, and to take part in it was absolutely incredible. And I have to disagree with that gentleman. It was extremely peaceful. There was a lot of good signs. He had just had the former president had his little kerfuffle with Meryl Streep. So my sign said Meryl Streep for president, but it was an amazing event. And I don't know if Ken witnessed it or had any, was there, and there was no violence. I didn't even see a violent sign. There was a lot of humorous ones. There were some very good ones about women's rights and reproductive freedom, but no violence. In fact, I remember being packed. I mean, it was more people than I'd ever been around in my life. Every direction you looked, as far as you can see, you know, people and buses. It was really cool. But the other thing I want to say, at one point, crowded in the area close to the White House, a couple of young men, two or three young men with the red MAGA hats walked through the crowd. I did not hear one person make any negative comment to them, treat them with any disrespect. So any comparison to anything that was done recently at the White House and the kind of violence we've seen, I've also seen comparisons made to Black Lives Matter protests, is from my personal, you know, witnessing at the Women's March, just untrue.
All right, I got to jump in, Jason, because we're down to our last minute. I'll let Ken respond and then offer any final thoughts you've got for us, Ken Rudin.
No, I was just going to say, I heard Sean Spicer said there weren't that many people at that women's march, but go ahead.
Oh, boy. Final thoughts from you, sir. I know you're working just as hard as you have and bringing us your work through krpoliticaljunkie.com. Let me close by asking you this. You said that you were almost shaking still when you sat down to think about how to do your last podcast here. Is that cloud starting to lift at all? What's it going to take going forward?
It is. I mean, the fact that I don't get woken up anymore by saying, "Did you hear what Trump tweeted today?" And I just feel that whatever rantings he does, while he should not be dismissed, I just feel like I can exhale. I just feel, and I said this during the inauguration, I had a lot of tears. The poet laureate was just amazing. The history of Kamala Harris. It just feels good. That doesn't mean that Joe Biden is going to be a great president or whatever. There's roadblocks ahead, but I just feel a cloud has been lifted.
All right. Ken Rudin, political junkie, krpoliticaljunkie.com. And yes, just based on the email and phone calls, we could have done this for 3 hours, but it was a fast hour. Always appreciate the time. Thank you, Ken.
Evan, I like being on your show a lot. Thank you so much.
That's a high compliment from him. And listeners, if you didn't get through, we'll try to bring Ken back with some frequency here. It's great to have him. Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and I want to remind you, this is day one of our February, our winter membership campaign. When I say member-supported public radio, I hope that's you. I hope you can jump on WXXINews.org, WXXI.org/give. It'll take you 90 seconds, and you will feel good to support your public radio. Thank you.